This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
SecondCityHockey.com.
Jonathan Toews.
Commit to us. Commit to the jersey. Commit to our people here.
Welcome in to another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager here at Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at @SCH_DaveM. And I've got all my usual line mates with me this evening because it is NHL preseason time and we're all so excited. Can you feel the excitement in the room?
Yay.
No, I guess not. All right. Well, anyway, let's bring in the usual panel. First up, the analytics darling of Second City Hockey, Shepard Price.
So the preseason is about like as useful as the NFL preseason. And I don't think anybody in Chicago could tell me the Chicago Bears preseason record this year. And it's been, what, 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah. I'm trying to 1-2.
No, it's 4 weeks.
No, they only played 3 games this year. See how important the NFL preseason is? They only did 3 games this year, and I have no idea. But it was a precursor to them going 17-2. So
exactly. So well, maybe the 2 losses are going to be to the Detroit Lions.
It's going to be hard for them to do the first one.
I know. They just beat us. We're miserable this year. Anyway. That's going to be how we remember the Chicago Blackhawks preseason is like, oh yeah, remember their record? Absolutely not.
No, I'm trying to think of other, like the last preseason was weird, COVID, all that. And then like, I'm trying to think of anything. The only thing I can tell you that happened in a preseason game would have been 3 or 4 years ago when they signed or when they acquired Brandon Manning, however they got him. And like the number one concern was he's not really fast and the league is getting faster. And in a preseason game against the Red Wings, he got roasted by Athanasiou. And that was like the epitome of this is your biggest concern. And you saw it in before the actual games even started. That's all I got for NHL preseason talk from the past. So
there you go. I mean, Brandon Manning got us Drake Kajula, and Drake Kajula was not nothing while he was in Chicago.
Can't confirm he was not nothing, but yeah. Also, not nothing, and joining us this evening, he is the Second City Hockey, what Scott Lucas is to Local H. It is Mil Savic.
I'm a high-fiving MF-er. So before we get into the hockey talk, just want to go out on record as a teamless person right now. wishing to Dave and Shepard my sincerest good luck to your White Sox and to my other White Sox fans friends. And if they don't get it done, I'm going to raise hell for on your behalf.
Yeah, I've been for the last like month or two, I've been kind of keeping it at bay, and Shepard might be the same way. Like, I haven't really gotten too up or down about anything that's happened. Just as long get like, I just want them to get everyone back, them all healthy. And now, like, I am so excited for the next month to be, because I've forgotten how stressful and wonderful and miserable at the same time playoff baseball can be.
Well, my dad has tickets to game four, if there's a game four, and I will be going to Ace Hardware and picking up a garbage can and bringing it to the stadium. And if they let me in with a garbage can, they'll let me in with a garbage can. And if you hear it, if you hear someone banging a garbage can during Astros batters, especially Jose Altuve, shout out Blackhawks.
Are you going to bang it during Keuchel pitching?
I hope to God that he's not pitching game four. I hope it's Reynaldo, or I hope it's Cease.
I'm just kidding. But in all seriousness, I do have a really good group of collective White Sox fans friends who have never picked on me or made fun of me my whole life like everybody else did. So I'm rooting for you guys, for them, and for everybody else who talked shit to me my whole life. Get a life and root for your own team.
There you go. Well said.
Unless it's Detroit. Fuck Detroit. And St. Louis.
Well, on that note, I don't have a good segue for this, but let's bring in the last member of the panel. And she's not on Twitter, but you can find all her stuff at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. She is the SCH bull and wall of text. It is Betsy.
You guys just said a bunch of words I don't know anything about. There were lots of names dropped.
Baseball and, like, stuff.
Events and stuff like that. I was like, I know who the White Sox are. And then I was like, after that, I was like, just zoned out a little bit.
Well, if in case Shepard and I get too busy watching all of the White Sox stuff, you and Mill can take over the website for the next month. So
comments will be real busy between the two of us.
It's going to be like a GIF bomb goes off. Like, all of our stuff is just like GIFs all the time.
Yeah, just being like pretentious and like yelling at people.
Yes.
Okay. There's going to be a lot of yelling. Okay, a lot of yelling. Got it.
By the way, Shepard, I want to see the picture of the trash can. Granted, you get to go. Hopefully you do, because that will be hilarious.
Yes.
By the way, before we get to like talk about hockey things, like, what is the material you're going to go? Are you just going for like a plastic one? You're going to get like a tin one?
So it's,
I'm getting the tin one. It has to be the tin one, because that's the one they use, I'm pretty sure, too.
It's like the WWF style, like, hardcore match.
Yes.
Exactly.
Oh.
Or it makes noise.
Yeah. There's going to need to be visual evidence of this happening. So yeah, I'm going to be listening. I'll make sure I turn the sound up so I can listen for the trash can, especially while I was doing this. Awesome. So real quickly, you can find us all on Twitter. I already gave my handle out. Shepard's at Shepard Price. Mill is at Mill182. As I said, Betsy's not on Twitter. But the main Second City Hockey account is at 2ND City Hockey. And again, secondcityhockey.com is where you can find all our stuff. And speaking of that stuff, it's been a lot of preseason stuff lately, and that is why we have assembled here on this Tuesday evening to kind of recap the last four Blackhawks preseason games that we've seen over the last week. It's been up and down, a little bit in between. They played, one of the games was not supposed to be on TV, and it wasn't, but it was available on the internet in St. Louis, and it looked like it was played in just some random bar. It was an ECHL arena, I believe. And the Blackhawks won that game, despite the Blues sending all their studs and the Hawks not. It was a very interesting circumstance. So the Blackhawks preseason record is 2-3 now, I believe. After they beat Detroit the other night?
Yeah, 2-1-1.
I forgot about the overtime aspect. I guess I just want to throw out to the panel just any early impressions or takeaways or key observations through the first five preseason games. Shepard, we'll start with you.
Jonathan Toews is alive again.
Hey, yeah.
In a good way, in a very good way. He went, what, a point per game pace in the games he played? More, probably? I think it was more.
Yeah, I just changed my mind. Preseason matters. Jonathan Toews is a point per game player, so it does matter now.
And then Brandon Hagel. Hello. What? Okay. Hi. That was this preseason. That's a good preseason.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like Hagel very much picked up where he left off last year.
Yeah, I feel like, again, I feel like he's even more modern Andrew Shaw and probably a little bit more skilled and faster, definitely faster. But he's like that guy who can slide in on any role and in any line and make a difference. And I just, he's good.
I'm like, I feel like the hands may not quite be to Shaw's level yet, but
maybe not scoring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he had several like nice plays that he set up as well. Not just the goals that he scored, which is, he had three assists on Monday night against Detroit. I don't think they were all primary, but
they were all primary.
Okay.
Two of them were him just out hustling people and then throwing the puck where he thought a player might be, and it worked out, which is smart. So, yeah.
Yes, he and Mackenzie Entwistle were quite the dynamic duo on whatever third, fourth line, whatever line it was in that game. And like Adam Gaudette was in the middle, kind of a passenger, just watching those two do all the things.
Yeah.
Yeah, Entwistle justified where I put him in the top 25 under 25.
there you go. He made everyone look smart. Betsy, anything that you've noticed through these first five preseason games?
But they're preseason, so you can't read too much into the vets not doing stuff. But I will say I am not impressed with the DeBrincat, Johnson, Kane line so far. They're not clicking. I mean, Kane and DeBrincat are clicking, and then they seem to have like individual things, but as a line, they got buried in both games that they played together, like wiped out. And I get that they're going to be targeted by the top defenders and they're just going to get piled on, but that just means it's maybe not ideal. And I say this as a Tyler Johnson fan, because I think he was a great pickup and will be good for two reasons, because we don't know how Taves is going to handle the full season. So he'll be able to eat meaningful minutes. And two, we don't know if Doc is ready for upper line minutes full time. So Tyler Johnson is a great stopgap to help lift both those guys up. But I don't know if he's ready for 1C stuff, which is where he seems to be played right now. So I'm a little worried about that. But on the positive side, all the kids look like the kids that we expected to look good. Entwistle looks good. Hagel obviously looks great. Kurashev has looked awesome. There's a reason he's been kind of glued to Taves and Kubalik. And that line seems to be working, even if they haven't cashed in completely. And then Henrik Borgstrom has had two really good games back to back. So, I'm excited about that. And Gaudette had his first game was good, but I haven't really cared for him since.
How dare you slander Adam Gaudette's name? I'm fully driving the Adam Gaudette bandwagon. I might be the only person on it, but and it's getting borderline irrational at this point, I'll admit. But for some reason, I had myself convinced that he's going to be good this season. So we'll see how that all goes.
I will say I have a pet peeve with people about him. I don't mind everybody being like, I hope he does well. I do too. I hope he breaks out. But it's weird that people are like, oh, I think Strome or Borgstrom or even Nylander are done. And I'm like, Gaudette at those is like a year to two older than all of them. Right. So like, if you're like willing to give Gaudette a chance at, 25, you should be like, well, these guys get some more time. Maybe not with the Hawks, but in general. I'm like, you're looking at it in a weird bubble. And it skewed your perspective, but I hope all of them work out, but I don't care which one does, as long as somebody work out.
Mill, you've been unusually quiet, so let's bring you in for your preseason observations.
Well, first, Dave, I'll join you on the Gaudette bandwagon if all you right. Take me to Taco Bell.
We got two people. There we go.
It's polarizing. It's fun to play devil's advocate in these conversations, but,
yes, it is.
Yeah. Like echoing what everyone else said, it's kind of like it's preseason. The vets aren't going to go out of their way to do anything crazy. They don't want to get hurt or pull a hammy or anything. They know they're making the team. Taves, like to echo what Shepard said, very encouraging that Taves looks good. And I mean, he looks really good, which is nice. And I think other than that, just like the kids are busting ass. Everyone wants to make the team. So I think the Hawks have a load of talent. It's just going to be if they can execute. Like there's some pretty good young players.
Yeah, I think they've played against the games against St. Louis. Like they didn't send really their A team for much of, I guess the first one they did a little bit. The second game was mainly young guys, and the other two were against Detroit, and Detroit's in like year 30 of their rebuild, I think, at this point, it seems. So I don't know how much you can take away from that game. The next two against Minnesota could be interesting because Minnesota is supposed to be a pretty good team this season. And if the Hawks do send, I feel like for one of those games, they will probably send what is at or near the lineup we'll see in game one next Wednesday. So I think that game you might get the best barometer of what this team's going to look like for the regular season. I'm with you, Mil, though. It goes back to what you said back in the summer. Like this team is going to be interesting. I'm still not sure if they're going to be good, bad, indifferent or what, but it's going to be interesting, and interesting can at least sustain me from now till Christmas. And we'll see what happens after that. But, it's nice to have something interesting. It's so much different than last year when before training camp even opened, Taves went down and Doc went down, and you knew immediately like, all right, well, this is not going to be a fun season. So this is way more fun.
I think it might get a little tough when you get into the deep part of those, you know, dog days, so to speak, because legs start to get heavy for inexperienced guys. Mm-hmm. And those are really the points that matter, you know. In a tough division, but the Hawks do have talent, and I don't know. I mean, their division's not, it's like there are some pretty bad teams in their division too.
Yeah. They're going to need to fatten up against like Arizona.
And
not lose 7 of 8 to Nashville. That would also,
well, that's the thing I was going to say is they don't play everybody 8 times this year. So it's like, they have to win some of these weird games they're going to have. You know, they're going to have to play everybody now. So it's
a lot. And then they'll have to like steal a game from like Pittsburgh or steal a game from Florida.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, New York teams. I don't know if it's going to be possible against the Islanders, but against the Rangers.
Yeah. Gallant might still outcoach them though.
Oh, I think for sure he will.
Well, yeah. From a, like we talked a lot about guys that have stood out. Is there anybody that you have been disappointed in, or Betsy talked about one person, the player she was not impressed by. Is there anyone that you are more down on? And we'll just skip past Alex Nylander because it seems like everyone's going to say that, because it seems like he's destined for the AHL, at least at the start of the season. But are there any other players that have caught your eye for the wrong reasons or anything like that, Shepherd Mill?
I'm concerned about Strome. Just it's more or less that they don't want him. It's not his fault.
It feels like there's something there. Like there's a decent player within him. And I don't think it's like entirely for a lack of trying on his part. Like I'm sure he's trying, but they also keep throwing him on the fourth line with guys who can't.
Right.
Compliment him. So
yeah, he's a middle six player who deserves to be played with middle six players. But.
And I wrote about Strome a little bit and his production being down. It's like, And this isn't trying to say the same thing I always do, but you look at how their offense is run. He's not really a transition guy. He has to kind of play in the house and get on the inside and not on the fly. They have to set up and cycle, and the Hawks do not cycle.
No,
they did they did have a few sustained possessions that led to goals. I believe against Detroit, I think it was one game where I noticed a concerted effort to actually have the puck for a while instead of just scoring off the rush like they did all of last season. And I thought that was slightly encouraging. Shepherd, did you have any players you wanted to toss into this ring?
Not that we talked about. Nylander.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, Nylander's the low hanging fruit here. So I feel it's going to be there. I guess one name that I will toss out, and I don't want people to overreact to this, I will just say I was really excited to see Lucas Reichel. He's kind of looked like a 19-year-old, which isn't a bad thing because he is a 19-year-old. It seems like he's destined for Rockford. Not worried about it, not down on him by any means. But I don't think he's the type of guy that's going to show up and grab a roster spot immediately like some other players have in the past. So there's that.
Yeah, that's fine. He needs some time to transition. He needs
to North American ice. He was 17th overall pick. It's not like he's a top 10 pick.
Yeah, and if he goes and lights up the AHL, then you bring him up in the second half of the season, no harm done.
Exactly, and he's made that transition to the NHL or North American ice and has shown that he can do it a second.
Yeah, good point. Good point on your side, Dave. He's 19, not 25, so there's time.
Yeah, he's not Adam Gaudette's age.
Our guy.
A little bit 25.
Hey, that's our guy now, Dave. Yeah. Adam Gaudette.
Thing that was really noticeable Monday night is this what seemed like it was going to be the top pairing of Seth Jones and Jake McCabe. At 5-on-5, like, I don't think the Hawks gave up a 5-on-5 goal. I think every goal they allowed last night was a power play goal. So I guess they didn't allow any goals, but Jones and McCabe threw the puck away at least 10 times, it felt like. And there was a lot of, like, it looked like they were throwing it where they thought their D partner was going to be and they weren't there. And so, and I believe at practice today, those two were split up. I think Riley Stillman was up with McCabe and Jones was with Murphy, right?
Stillman was with Jones.
Stillman was with Jones. Okay. So yeah, it was not, again, preseason game, not a huge sample, but McCabe and Jones, if they decide to play them together in the regular season, probably going to need a little bit more on ice chemistry than they exhibited on Monday night.
It is awkward first date. Give them
It was correct.
And to be fair, they both were better defensively because the first game they played together, they were like out of sorts completely. And both were like, both of them were like, we harp on Jones, right? But we all like McCabe and we all think he's good, but he looked weird defensively the very first game. I don't know how to explain it, but he did not look like himself. They both looked much better the next game. There were some people talking about the PK. I'm not going to hold the penalty kill against them because the way it's been played for the last few years has, like, they stretch out too much. Like, I don't know what they're doing, but there's a reason that they're one of the worst penalty kills for years, except the year that Leonard and Crawford carried them to a top 10 because they both were excellent PK goalies.
They got bailed out by the goalies, yeah.
Yeah, but they were still, like, 27th or something in expected goals against on the penalty kill. So you're like, stop that. And last year they were 24th or 23rd or something like that. Year before that they were 28th expected goal. Like, so they need to help their goalies out more on the penalty kill. So I'm not going to hold that against anybody.
I think too, like, it's a lot easier for a guy like Johnson playing center to just slot in than it is for like a defenseman, any defenseman, to like slot into man to man. It's just something they're going to have to get used to because they don't know where their partner's at. That's the problem.
I don't think they're playing man-to-man the same way last year. They've definitely, they seem to be playing way more zone.
They do, but they're not, it's still not that kind of like,
it's still hybrid,
Yeah, where it's like down the middle shift where like you know where your guy's at. It seems like they don't know where each other's at to me, if that makes sense.
Well,
no, that's definitely true.
Their first game of the year, they play Colorado's, who's going to be skating with rockets up their ass the entire game.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
Speed.
Yeah, let's.
So
just,
we're gonna find out any changes that have been made to their system. We will see them because Colorado's speed will. I mean, you have a lot of ground to cover because Colorado moves a lot. So we'll see if they're doing more man to man, you'll see guys skating all over the place. If they're sitting back in more of a zone based system, you won't see them chasing as much. And if it's a hybrid, obviously it'll be in the middle somewhere. So I guess we'll find out is the story of all that.
Well, as a person who's watched the Colorado Avalanche play their team in the last year, so your expectations low for that season opener because I don't think the Blackhawks are
the Hawks. Like, I feel like the Hawks haven't been good against Colorado even in their heyday.
Yeah,
they
since they were in the Nordique. Colorado's first two years in Colorado, they beat the Hawks in the playoffs, and it's been downhill ever since.
every streak the Blackhawks have had has been ended by the Avalanche too. Like that 2012-2013 season where they their first loss, Colorado.
Yeah, Carcillo scored
Kane's amazing. Yeah, Kane's massive point streak. Kane's massive point streak ended by Colorado. Like those, the Avalanche are a nightmare.
Sounds like what we're saying. Fuck Colorado.
Exactly.
That's not true. It's a great state. I love it.
Also, the other problem is like the Hawks keep getting shelled on their openers. Like they had to open against Tampa last year.
Except for that one year where they put like 10 up against Pittsburgh.
Oh, that was glorious.
Okay, so I was at that game, and the thing is, that was glorious, but that wasn't like a shitty Pittsburgh team. They just played like shit, and they had Niemi.
Yeah, of course. They won the first two games, and then the rest of the season was shit.
I went to the first two, and they put up 10-1 and 5-1 on Columbus, yeah. And it was like when Panarin just got to Columbus, and he was like invisible, and I'm thinking, man, they look good, and then they just went to shit.
Well, it was fun while it lasted, but yeah, so like the way we've talked about not overreacting to any of the preseason games or not drawing too much of a conclusion from them, try not to get too worked up if the Hawks get boat raced that first game of the year, because, well, Colorado's very good and the Hawks are still the other thing is like it's like obviously on this podcast there has been a decent amount of criticism of the coach and the systems and all that. And I don't want to relitigate that entirely, but
why?
Because there are so many new faces on the team this year. I'm willing to at least like wait a little bit. The one thing that will drive me insane is if the Hawks start losing the same way that they've always been losing, which is just getting grossly outpossessed and outshot and everything. And the only way they score goals is on the power play. And the only way they win games is if they get power play goals and obnoxiously good goaltending. If that happens again, then I'll be ready to throw everything up in the air. But I would just caution everyone, like, you might have to give it a week or two, or I don't know, maybe a month or two might be stretching it, but give it like 5 to 10 games before you draw any real conclusions about the team or players in general, just because there's a lot of new faces on this roster compared to
from a statistical standpoint, it's 20 games. Just
there you go. 20 games. And that'll probably take us roughly till the end of 2021. Something like that. I don't exactly know how that works out, but
adversely, if they somehow have another Pittsburgh outing where they beat the brakes out of Colorado, because Colorado can't be bothered, don't get too excited.
Yeah. Don't go lean either way.
Yeah. Not too high, not too low, right in the middle. That'll be the best for everyone involved. We're going to talk about some more Blackhawk stuff, maybe some more idea of what it's going to look like when we get to that regular season. And we're going to do that right on the other side of this timeout. So come on back for all of that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison. As promised before the break, we wanted to dive into a few more team things, kind of start looking towards the regular season, because it's going to be here before we know it. When we gather to do this podcast next week, it is going to be entirely for a season preview. So hope you guys didn't have any other plans, because we got 82 Blackhawks games coming up over the next 6 months. Once again, I hope you can all feel the excitement in the room. So the big thing I wanted to start with talking about, and Betsy mentioned this briefly in our opening segment, is that Tyler Johnson is apparently getting crowned as the number one center, which I feel like whether he's the number one center or it's Taves, he's getting the spot between Kane and DeBrincat. And so we're just going to call that the number one center, because that's probably the cushiest spot out of all the center positions to be. And I guess the question I have, and Betsy, since you brought it up, I will let you go first, is – I just want to ask you the straight yes or no. Is it a good fit? But what kind of fit is it? A good, decent one? Does it work? I don't know.
If you were talking about slotting Tyler Johnson in on like the 2015 team, like Brad Richards would slot it in, I think it'd be great. You know, like I think he'd be fine behind Taves and a dominating line that will also take up top quality of competition, but that's not going to happen now. It's going to be Kane and DeBrincat getting it all. Taves and Kubalik are going to be dangerous, but teams aren't going to focus on them quite as much. They didn't the years before that either. Like Kane has been the big draw, and DeBrincat has arisen as the next big draw. So I don't know if Tyler Johnson can handle that with both of them. And not in the sense of, I think he can probably be as good as Suter was, but Suter also wasn't an ideal 1C. He did an admirable job, but it is not ideal for a team that is hopefully going to be in the playoffs. I don't know what the goals are for the end thing, but I would rather Tyler Johnson be playing a little bit less high quality comp. I don't know. It doesn't work so far. We'll have to give him more time maybe to see, but I think that it's going to be a difficult thing. When you said cushiony, I was like, yeah, because those guys are great in terms of offense, and who can't score with them, except lots of people can't. they're just along for the ride. But
well, yeah, cushiony might not have been the right word, because it is difficult to play to be on the level that Kane and DeBrincat are on, especially Kane.
Yeah, like if again, Brad Richards, Artem Anisimov, those guys were good in between or beside excellent players, because Brad Richards' other linemate was Versteeg, who was good but not excellent. But the reason they worked is because Taves was still ridiculously great. And I think he will be ridiculously great, but there is no Hossa on the Hawks. So it is not going to be the same.
No yeah, matter. Like
that statement is evergreen.
Yeah.
Like when Tyler Johnson addressed the media and he was asked about playing with DeBrincat and Kane, and his response was, well, I played with Nikita Kucherov, which is true. Again, like in during the Lightning, like during the prime of Johnson's career in the mid late 2010s, he did play with Kucherov a ton. But the last few seasons, like he was kind of slowly getting knocked down the lineup. I mean, in the 1920 regular season, I've got these stats pulled up. Johnson was on the ice with Kucherov for 104 minutes in the regular season, and Kucherov played 850 minutes away from Johnson. Johnson did 661 without Kucherov. I believe he was still playing with Stamkos and Palat. Was that the line, Betsy?
Yeah, he played with them a lot, but I mean, there was the triplets line the one year they did really well in the playoffs too.
Yeah. But then like obviously in the in the 2020 postseason, they played together 822. So that's I think it seemed like that's when Johnson slowly started getting knocked down a little bit. Obviously, during the last regular season, nobody played with Kucherov because he didn't play at all, because Tampa took the crown away from the Hawks of learning how to LTIR themselves into a championship, which no shame to them. They did it very well. But and so in the 2021 postseason, Johnson was pretty much the fourth line center, and he played with Kucherov for 749. Of the entire postseason. That's 7 minutes and 49 seconds. So yeah, he used to play with Kucherov and used to play with like the really talented guys in Tampa, but he hasn't done it recently. So you've heard from me and Betsy and Mill on this. So Shepard, when you found out that apparently Tyler Johnson's going to be the number one center for the Hawks, what were your thoughts of that?
Yeah, I agree with LBR. I don't think he's the right fit there, especially because like he's just along for the ride. You want somebody who can contribute, especially with those two other players, contribute defensively, and whether that's Strome or whether that's Doc, who could use that opportunity as a learning opportunity. And if that's like a cushioned position, that center between those two, where you don't really need to be at your best at all the times, because the other two will just take care of it, which is clearly why Johnson is there, then like Doc's better off there and learning there, and then like contributing defensively. I'd put Borgstrom there too, if Borgstrom can play defense instead.
Yeah.
He has not shown that he could in the past, so I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I remember that being one of the knocks on him from Florida, or when he was in the NHL before he went back.
Also in the NCAA, that was not his strong suit.
Okay, so not Borgstrom, but Doc, and again, Strom has proven that he has had the ability to play there in the past, and like Chris Kunitz built a career out of playing with good, of being able to play with good players. So why can't Dylan Strome?
Well, Dylan Strome might as well be Kevin McAllister in this organization. But when you, when you go back to last week's podcast, I literally said on last week's podcast, and I agree with both of you, all three of you guys, but it's like, I said, Johnson's going to end up being number one center because look who the coach is and look at Taves coming back and Doc coming back and then not caring about Strome, et cetera. I'm like, they're just going to put him there.
And see, like, I've been thinking about this, like, I mean, line combos tend to get changed over the course of a season anyway. So, I mean,
or a game.
I don't want to get too worked up about a preseason lineup, but it is a little weird. But I think the one thing I've talked myself into that I don't mind is if, you know, with Kirby Doc missing so much of last season, I think an ideal situation with this is that Johnson starts there between DeBrincat and Kane, and then maybe a month or two in the season, if Kirby Doc shows or turns back into the player that looked really, really good in the 2020 postseason, maybe at some point you hand off that role from Johnson to Doc. Johnson goes down to your third line. And then you have, you know, Doc, Taves, and Johnson right down the middle. That's a pretty decent thing, especially if Doc proves to be worthy of that number one center role between Kane and DeBrincat. Like, that wouldn't suck, right?
That remains to be seen.
Well, yeah, obviously remains to be seen. Yeah.
I like your theory on it. I really do. It's just Doc has to take that next step.
Yeah, I think we talked about that a little bit last week, but if Doc could just take that first step, like within the first month of the season and put aside any fears about him, that would just be wonderful for the collective mental health of everybody in the Blackhawks fan base.
And I was going to say, when we were talking about this on Slack, Dave, you know, I was looking up like points, like trajectory, because he didn't make the, you know, like he broke out in the NHL and started playing like a 2C, like 1C minutes towards the end of his, when he turned 21. Mm-hmm. So Doc's still like a year away from that, like that age where a bunch of centers start to really click, 21, 22. Like several of them click sooner than that, obviously, but I'm not sure Doc, because of his year off, we can allow for some leeway, but just 20 would be a good year if he could at least cement himself as a 2C. Like, that's my goal for him. With 1C as like a future, like one season away from that. It's kind of what I hope.
Like, points aside, though, I think he just needs to go out there and win every board battle. You know, take the high danger shot. Don't try to pass. You don't have time. Like, he has to be a little bit more of a bitch out there, so to speak. Like, he's no, seriously, the dude's huge.
You're right.
He's skilled. And he has to kind of get a little bit ferocious. Like, I hate to use a you know, an intangible word, but like, he seems a little timid.
needs more grit. Needs more sandpaper.
Yeah, I wouldn't use grit. I would say maybe like he needs a little more ass.
He was really good in like against Vegas. You saw all that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what I'm saying. We know he has it.
Yeah, I will say the one point against him maybe playing with Kane and DeBrincat is that the center and those lines tend to defer to them. And if we want Doc to become his own player and to learn his own way, maybe playing away from them is a good thing to start.
That is a very good point. That it's, you got halfway through it, I'm like, yeah, this is that's a very good point. It's not easy playing between DeBrincat and Kane. And I guess then the theory is if Doc turns into the player we all hope he turns into on his own line, and you can leave him there, then you have Kane and DeBrincat tearing shit up on their line, and then you have Doc on another line tearing shit up by himself, and then the Taves, Kubalik, and Kurashev line does well. That's three pretty good lines. And
thank Gaudette tearing shit up.
And then Gaudette tearing shit up on the fourth line. There we go. That a boy, way to bring it all home.
Land the Misfit Toys line.
I was trying to think if there's any other. Oh, one other name I wanted to throw out there really quick. Jacob Galvis. I don't know if he's going to break camp with the team. Wyatt Kalinick's injury at practice today is going to be out for a few weeks. Seems to heighten that possibility. Any impressions on Jacob Galvis? Because as I watch, there was a few times where I watched him during game and he just looked very comfortable out there. Like, there's a few times where like he got puck in kind of a high traffic, high pressure situation and just very calmly like moved it on to the next teammate. Like, didn't look like he was bothered by it at all. So is anybody else seen anything out of this kid that caught your eye?
I mean, we had him highly rated last year on the top 25 under 25 list. He just wasn't on it this year, so he's a little bit of a shock that like he's doing this well.
Yeah, like I'm trying to even remember where he came from. Like, I feel like he, like with the
latter round pick.
Yeah, like with all the focus on young defensemen last year, like he kind of got overshadowed by the Mitchells and the Bowdens and the Boquists and all that. Well, and
he wasn't even. Like there was some talk about whether or not he'll actually even sign with the Blackhawks, where the Hawks would even want to sign him. Mm. And then suddenly they were like, nope, they're signing them. And it was like, okay, that makes sense. He's doing well ish over there.
He took a step back last season too in the Liga. I thought so too.
Like he was fine, but he kind of stagnated a little bit or a little bit backwards. He's looked really good in the games so far. He hasn't been tasked with anything super difficult, but he wouldn't be if he made the team. The only issue with him is that I think like everybody's a lefty except for Murphy
right.
in that case, because Kalynuk was playing on the right. Jones and Murphy obviously are on the right, but who's going to be that last righty? Can somebody else play on that side? Cause I don't, no, maybe he can, but that's hard to ask. But he is at that right age. He's at 22, which is a good age for somebody to break into. He is smaller side, decent defensively, tends to be good in transition, but not like superb. It's an interesting. He's been interesting to watch.
Yeah, I think he was one of the bigger surprises, just that he is in the talk for a roster spot. I did not expect that. I assumed like when the Hawks signed him, like, well, that seems like Rockford Icehogs material next year. So I guess we'll see how that goes. Any other thoughts? I think we pretty much covered all the bases, hit all the fields we wanted to, unless I'm missing something.
Dave's yelling at me on Twitter right now.
It's because you're quote tweeting Kyle Schwarber hitting home runs, which again, as I think we talked about earlier, is making I'm still vicariously sad. Not vicariously. It's not the right word. I'm still sad that the Cubs thing was ripped apart in the offseason. So
the Ricketts get what they deserve. But you know what? It's okay. I just I gotta pull for a couple guys that are still in it. But yeah, I think I'm not trying to multitask, but you know how we feel about baseball this time of year.
It is October baseball season, so sorry if our attention is diverted.
Well, my hyper ADHD is driving me crazy.
Yeah,
the last hockey thing I was gonna say was, who do you think Subban's gonna get picked up off waivers? Because I think the implication that Bowman had was, because he said something like, we know who the top two are, obviously Fleury. We assume Lincoln. And so I'm actually like not cool. Like, I don't want Subban to go. I think he is actually a really good backup. So
that actually walks me perfectly right into one of the questions we got on Twitter from Ice Devil of Carlsbad, wanted to know who's the number two goalie and how much work will they each get, because Fleury is getting up there in age.
Lincoln in 20 games.
Lincoln in 25 games.
That's it. I was thinking more like 30.
You're right. 30. This is the modern NHL. Like, it's been proven that like goaltenders who like keep it cool. I know Vasilevsky broke that rule last year because Vasilevsky played most of their games, but it was Tampa Bay, and it is still my opinion that the Tampa Bay goaltender doesn't matter because they're playing behind the Tampa Bay roster.
And Vasilevsky's also what, like 25, 26? Like, he's still very young.
It's better if you want a long playoff run to rest your goaltender, and Lonkin is good enough.
Fleury is a perfect example of that in the last few playoffs he's had, because he was good for Vegas until like started getting deeper into the thing, and then you were like, oh, you're totally seeing that he needs to rest. But the same thing happened with Pittsburgh's last run, right? Like, he was good until the end, and then he started to falter, and Pittsburgh wasn't great defensively, so fresh Matt Murray came in and they were like, see, the wonder kid, except obviously he didn't.
Nope.
He's not going to
know.
Fleury's not going to be the goalie for Team Canada in the Olympics, is he? Right?
He's going to go.
I think he gets invited.
Yeah, I think he'll be their main backup.
I was thinking like my initial thought was that'd be a good 3 weeks for him to kind of rest up and regenerate and get ready for the final stretch.
He'll play the one game that the backups get in the Olympics.
Yeah. So it'd be Carey Price then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Look,
No.
Oh, it's going to be
Price. I agree with you guys. But the problem is, you see what Colleton did after he didn't have Crawford and Leonard. He rode the hot guy. And it's like, if Fleury is that good again this year, hopefully, I just don't think he's going to give him as many nights off.
Well, then Bowman needs to have a talk with him.
Well, I mean, yeah, but Bowman has to have, here's a list of shit he has to have a talk with him about.
But yeah, like, but like that's one of those things you'd have to be like, listen, we understand this whole system. You need to chill out. Part of the reason they burned out so much is because the Blackhawks, like the other thing is that the Blackhawks, as we all know, were not good defensively last year and quality against, I mean, Dave or Mill that posted the chart that was like, who is very much the worst quality team in the league?
Clearly. I saw that and I threw up in my mouth a little bit. No, I agree with, like, I totally am on board with what you're saying. I'm just looking at it from the perspective of what we've seen from the Hawks in the past. And I'm just like, those guys are like thinking, oh, people are already buying Fleury jerseys, like, you know, by the cartful, like, might as well just, you know, milk it if he's good. Cause that's how they think. It's dollar bill all over again.
So what's going to happen with Dealey and Subban? Like, Betsy brought up Subban, and like, I feel like Dealey's in the boat too. Like, I mean, are they just going to let, like, run these guys through waivers? And like, if you send them to the AHL, then like Arvid Söderblom's already there. And it seems like they have a high hope for him in the future.
Yeah. One of those two is getting traded. And then Söderblom will be in a battery probably with Delia.
Yeah, like I think like we all keep assuming like Strom's getting traded and Delia or Subban's getting traded, but I guess the other side's like they have to find a trade partner as well. I mean, I assume someone needs a goalie. Maybe the Hawks will just hold on to him until the first goalie injury of the season and then send him out.
When does Strom's deal end?
He's after this season, I believe. This is his last year.
They might just send them back to Phoenix or to Arizona because they just have a bunch of those guys with expiring deals.
Yeah, Strom is $3 million this season, and then he's a restricted free agent. Yeah, I don't know. They have like as they seem pretty set on Lincoln and being the guy. I mean, he didn't have the best game of his life in the one preseason game he played, and I mean, I don't think he's going to get demoted based on that, but. It was like it certainly seemed like it opened a door for Dealey or Subban to make an attempt at the position if they wanted it. I don't think has Dealey played yet? I know Subban got the game in St. Louis that was only available via internet, right?
Yep.
The infamous internet game.
And then is Dealey played at all?
No. The only the three have played. Fleury, Lincoln, and Subban.
Yeah, and because they were raving on the broadcast the other night about how Delia was like in the top five for the the performance test that they had to go through at the start of training camp, that he like was like in the top five for guys in the best shape when they showed up for camp this year. So
Pat Foster is going to get a start before Delia at this rate.
Yeah,
I mean, seriously, they treat him like they don't care. He's in the same boat with Strom. Different situations, but like, what the hell?
And I don't really understand the deal because it seems like there's something there. Like, I'm not saying he's going to win the Vezina this year, but he's not.
Well, it's just unfortunately that they put so many guys near the same age, you know, next to each other, because Lincoln and Delia are what, like a year apart, and Subban's like a year and a half older than them, 2 years older than them. So it's like they're going to for longevity, they have to keep the two younger ones. So Subban, unfortunately, even though he might actually be the better, more consistent backup option for this season, they don't have the luxury of keeping him if they don't, unless they really, 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 really like Söderblom. I'm not going to say it incorrectly.
Subban and Delia are both 27. Lonkanen is 26.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Delia, I'm looking at Natural Stat Trick. Delia has played 25-04 this season, so he has played a preseason game. I don't remember what it was, but he made 10 saves on 11 shots. So there's that.
I feel like Delia just turned 20. Like, Malcolm is like, Malcolm's about to turn 28 in December, and Delia just turned 27. So less than a year apart, but they're like staggered close to each other. So mm-hmm. that yeah. they're all impacting at the same time. And there wasn't enough. We just didn't see Delia last year. You're like the point that Mill made where it was, they rode the hot hand. We, in a season where it was supposed to be a bit about evaluating, we actually didn't really evaluate one of the goaltenders at all.
Yeah. And again, like Delia was the guy, he was the original guy out of that trio. Like he was the first one with the team.
Well, on top of that too, it's like we had Crawford and Leonard at the same time. Traded Leonard, Crawford retires. Well, they don't resign him originally. And then it's like, all right, we're going to play the kids. And it's like, actually, we have Marc-Andre Fleury now. So it's kind of also weird on that aspect.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know.
Yeah, so maybe it'll depend on what they're thinking for this season. If they really think they're going for it, which is weird. but they did get Fleury. So they have some aspirations. Maybe they keep Subban because he's the better, like more guaranteed backup option, but Lincoln and I think will get picked up off waivers for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's going to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Eventually.
I think Delia.
I think Subban can go start in Buffalo right now.
Oh. I mean, I could go start in Buffalo.
I was right beat me to it.
me and Dave could be the two goalies there and we'd still have time to cheer on Adam Gaudette.
Exactly.
This is not getting old.
No. It might get there by about Thanksgiving, but for now we're gonna write it out while we can. We have one more question from that I wanted to get to. It's from the SCH commentary. It's from Drop the Puck, and I've actually been saving this player's name just for this question because I was gonna mention him earlier. But the question is eye test only, but Caleb Jones has looked good to me so far this preseason. What are you guys seeing? I've been impressed. He's been another pleasant surprise. I thought he was kind of destined for Rockford. But again, the Wyatt Kalynuk injury might have opened the door for him a little bit, and his own play might have opened the door for him a little bit. So I guess we'll see. Everyone else?
I thought he was for sure.
Yeah, for sure on the roster.
Yeah, I thought he was for sure 7D.
Yeah.
And I think, too, if you can move like that, that's going to be a big plus. So he can move a little bit.
I mean, technically speaking, he's been out playing his brother.
oh, God.
Well, his brother doesn't have to try to make the team.
I mean, to be fair.
Yeah.
I know. His older, obviously, Seth is playing, you know, higher competition and more minutes and all of that kind of stuff versus Caleb Jones, who's essentially been a bottom pairing D in most of his games and given lots of time in the OZ and stuff like that. So it's not the same.
He's also played on like the worst defensive, like he played for Edmonton. So it's like,
yeah.
How do you really know coming from Edmonton?
Yeah. He looks, I always assumed he was going to be 7D and I was good for that. And then he would rotate in and maybe get up, but he probably like it's between him and Stillman, I guess. Who's really going to be like that next bottom pair, but Stillman got paired into the top pairing in the last practice, so who knows?
Woo!
Like, okay.
Adventure.
Yeah, it's better to have Caleb Jones on the roster and not playing than it is to have Mitchell or Beaudin there because you want those two practicing and playing.
Yeah, you want Mitchell and Beaudin playing the 25 minutes night for the Ice Hogs. So yeah, I think Caleb Jones' performance so far has been encouraging, and there's nothing wrong. Like you need. Not everyone can be the top pairing defenseman. Like you still need a second and third D pairing to round out the group. So nothing wrong with Caleb Jones so far.
I think we can all agree that our preseason is preseason. However, if they don't stand out in the bad ways, then that's good.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's the MO or the desired effect for defensemen in the preseason is don't do something bad that makes everyone notice. So
don't pull an Urban Meyer.
Oh, that's very topical. Well done, Mill. Well, I appreciate that reference.
Current events, folks.
Yeah, we're on top of everything. So any other Blackhawks thoughts? I think we've kind of we got all the ballparks covered and got two more preseason games, and then we're gonna get real Blackhawks hockey. And it seems like a full like 82 game season with like fans in the stands. It's kind of. I mean, maybe the if the Hawks are really bad, the enjoyment of it will wear off quickly. But for the next like week, like I'm kind of like psyching myself up. Like this is going to be fun. Like I missed having a full 82 game hockey season and not games every other night, games like every two or three nights. And then just like fans in the building, like, God, I did not realize how much I missed having fans in the building, like watching some of the late regular season baseball games, watching the NFL games, even some of the preseason hockey games. Just having fans back in the stadium has been so nice.
Until you go to the stadium.
Well, I mean, I don't know how soon I'm going to a Hawks game. It's going to be first, probably before this month ends, because I need to go make sure the steak sandwich is still at Ironworks. So somebody in our comments did say was at the one or two games at the end of last season and said that it was still there, but I need to go confirm for myself and devour it quickly. So
otherwise, it's going to be the Simpsons meme where they put in a bunch of Starbucks everywhere. And the United Center would be perfect for that, honestly.
Betsy and Shepard, any thoughts? Anything else we missed?
No. I think we covered everything.
Yeah.
Well, we've got about 5 minutes left to go here. So this is usually with the food take. I mean, it's going to be a relatively brief one. But, Mill, I guess the floor was yours because of the pregame discussion we had. So let's hear it.
Ah, yes. So food is overrated. Not every food, but many foods.
Yes, I agree with this. If people devised a better way of eating and getting your nutrition that was just like a pill, as Evolving Hockey once said, I'd be willing to do that.
See, I feel like that's...
I like food too much.
Yeah, like, then what's the point of even having taste buds?
Well, I'm more coming from the point of view that, like, people will say this one type of food is amazing, but it's like, well, it varies by where you get it or how you make it or whatever.
Yes.
Like grits.
Or, you know, like, people like to talk about, like, I guess pizza is a good example. Like, all pizza is usually fine except for St. Louis pizza, but, like, it's not.
I will have you know that there is some very good pizza places in St. Louis.
All right. Well,
it's just about finding the right ones. Come visit me and I'll show you the right one. So
point made, right?
Yeah.
Point made.
Shepherd, it's almost like every food can be made bad and every food can be made good.
But isn't that like everything in life, like music or TV shows or like
hockey teams?
And hockey teams.
But I feel like art is more like, it's different because it's like so much more opinionated, whereas like you can make food where it could give you food poisoning.
Well, but is cooking food an art form?
It can be, but it's also a necessity.
Yes, and that's something like art or sculpture or architecture even is not necessity.
Architecture is because you've got to have good buildings.
We evolved to live outside. Architecture is not necessary.
I'm going to go ahead and stop you there because air conditioning is not outside and there's like humidity.
Yeah, air conditioning.
We did not evolve to live in Atlanta, Georgia.
I reject all of them.
I'm just saying that I hate when somebody hypes up some place and then you go get the food and then it sucks and you're like, hey, like I paid a lot of money for this and I could have made it at home better. What the hell?
I agree that money and food together can suck because why does it cost so much? Why? The ingredients don't cost that much. Why?
I got two large Aurelio's pizzas today. One was just cheese and one was three veggie topping and it was $66 before the tip.
Holy shit.
I was like, yeah, that's insane.
That's pretty hefty for three pizzas.
I mean, it's like, okay, it's not bad pizza by any means. It's not my favorite, but it's like, are you kidding me? Yeah. I mean, I know inflation's nuts right now on everything, but still it's like, come on, it's pizza.
Yeah. But I food's good.
Then again, man. Like, the United Center wants $15 for a slice of DiGiorno, so.
I mean, I made they call it crack chicken. Like, I don't know why it's called crack chicken, but like the crock pot recipe, I made it Monday and it's all I've been eating since because it's really good. And I don't. That doesn't seem overrated to me because it's quite an enjoyable experience.
Would you say you're addicted to the chicken?
not yet. Talk to me next week. If it's still the only thing I've eaten, we might need to have an intervention.
That might be why it's called crack chicken.
Oh, yeah. All right. There we go.
Once it gets cold here, I'm living out of the crock pot.
I'll say I agree. I would love if we had like Shepherd's Ed, where it's like a pill that you could take so you don't have to eat if you don't want to. But that way you would be able to eat. You could be more discerning with what you wanted to eat for pleasure. You know, like you would have your necessity part taken care of. So anything after that is just, okay, I want something good, you know,
kind of. I will have this pill as a well-balanced meal and then I will eat a cupcake.
Well, that's kind of what I do when I make protein shakes. Like if I want to have French toast, eggs and hash browns for breakfast with all kind of shit on top of it, I'm having like a protein shake for lunch. You know what I mean? Because it's like you got to balance it out.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know,
all right, so again, like so many of other of our food discussions, based on our different geographical locations and backgrounds and everything else, we got no consensus. So perfect.
Just like our hockey team, baby.
Exactly. All right. It was just like the Adam Gaudette of discussions, you know.
Oh, he's the GOAT.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to it. Visit secondcityhockey.com. We'll have all our preview content coming up in the next week. And follow the main account at 2ND City Hockey. Mill is at Mill182. I'm SCH_DaveM. Shepherd is at Shepherd Price. Betsy's not on Twitter, but all her stuff is at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. Keep an eye out here. We got more podcasts, articles, all that good stuff coming your way. Got a Friday show coming up this week that I've been waiting for 3 weeks to record because of, you'll see why. And then another one next week, and then we'll be back to full season mode. And yeah, we got a lot of stuff going. So stay tuned to these airwaves and the website and everything else. Thanks to the usual panel for hanging out again. Thanks again to you for listening. We're 1 week away, folks, and we get real hockey. I'm excited. So as we leave, we will leave you as we always do with the words, the Hawks.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.